great duly recovery. Duly recovered.
When it's dead and an addict,
I
do recover. When at the end of the road we find that we can no longer function as a human being, either with or without drugs, we all face the same dilemma. What is there left to do? There seems to be this alternative. We roll on as best we can to the bitter end, jails, institutions, or death, and find a new way to live. In years gone by, very few addicts ever had this last year. Those who are addicted today are more fortunate. For the first time in history, a simple way is improving itself in the lives of many addicts. It is available to us all. The simple cure will not enter this program known as Narcotics Anonymous.
Thank you. And with introduction, this is a great honor for me. I would like to introduce our first speaker, Johnny, who is very special to me. And it's like, I don't know what I have to say about it other than he's a hell of a good life.
Right from the beginning to the end.
So, here she is.
My name is Jenny, and I'm an addict.
Hi, Jenny.
And normally I would say addicts and alcoholics, but we don't differentiate here because alcohol is a drug.
Say what?
I'll start by telling you a little bit about myself. I've been around. I started drinking when I was 12. Probably had my first drink when I was about 5 or 6, because my grandfather was one of those kinds of people that would like to give you a drink off his whiskey. But I was allowed to drink at home. I was allowed to, my parents were the type of people that had cocktails for dinner, and we were allowed to have that, and that was okay, as long as you drank at home. Of course, if you don't know that, if you drink it at home, you drink it elsewhere, it doesn't make any difference, and it didn't take long for me to get involved in the drugs. It really didn't, because alcohol didn't do it for me at all. And I had the signs and symptoms of addiction probably since I was born. The low frustration tolerance, had a hard time handling things. I had attitude all the time when I was younger. Both parents, alcoholics. My father died of alcoholism when he was 42. I had everything there. Of course, back in that day, nobody knew how to look for it, or how to see it, or what anybody was looking for. I never got into marijuana much, never cared too much for that. So I just went kind of to the straighter stuff. I started out with like rebellion and stuff like that. And that kind of helped a little, because it helped calm me down, keep me on track, I thought. Of course, with all the other behaviors and the attitudes of an addict, you start acting irresponsibly. And I was pregnant by age 15. I had my first child at age 16. And that just really was great, because I decided to get married, and now I'm on my own. And I didn't have anybody to answer to. I could do what I wanted, when I wanted, and how I wanted it. And then the law even worked in my favor, because then we changed the law to drinking age is 18. And now I could be in the bars. It didn't take long with all of that, because I had the party girl attitude. And I thought I was taking care of my children. But all my behaviors said that I was an addict right from day one. All my behaviors said I stayed out a lot. I made sure the children were taken care of, because I racked up 3 by the time I was 21. But I made sure they were taken care of. And I had it in my head that I cared about them, and I did. I always did. No matter what my behaviors were, I always loved and cared about my children. And sometimes we forget that. I've worked with adolescents, and I have kids that come in with me into my facility, and their parents are users. And they feel very unloved and very uncared for, because parents are using. That's the first thing I try to tell them always, is I don't care how much parents use. I know I love my children, and I know these parents love me too. They just couldn't handle it. They just didn't know how to show it, and they just didn't have the ability at the time to be good parents. That's all. But they still love me, you know? They don't feel in love. And by the time I was started using heroin when I was 18, and cocaine, and I had a kid just ask me the other day, well, you know, we had a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun out there using. I lied. You'd be lying if I told you I didn't have some fun time. And without consequences, I'd probably still be using. Without consequences, it was fun. The consequences really wasn't the good part. And part of those consequences was not being a good parent and not having the joys of being a good parent. You know, part of the consequences were legal receipts. Part of the consequences are always for your behaviors. You always have consequences whether you're responsible or not. You know, you still have consequences. You lose things. And I was one of those chronic relapses. I do really well for a while and then I go back out again. And I always had excuses because that's what we do. It was just like recently into the last few years where you really, as I'm getting up in age, I'm looking back at some of the behaviors that I did have. And I'm thinking to myself back in those days, I didn't think I was that irresponsible. I thought I was doing pretty good and I always thought I was a good person. Well, when you're married and you wake up and you look up and you say, oh, you know, this feeling really doesn't look too familiar. And you look over here and you go, oh, who's that? There's something wrong with that. That is not good behavior. That's not being a good person. You know, it's real hard to start looking at those behaviors and saying, you know, really, I was really not good. You know, I really had a lot of problems and never wanted to look at those problems. It's scary. But throughout my life and throughout my addiction and my recovery, when I started into recovery, it was very difficult because I had a lot of attitudes and behaviors that were learned, and they were ingrained. And even if you take the drugs and the alcohol away, it's very hard to change the person. It's very hard to change the person and how you act and how you behave. I had a lot of that. It was very hard. And then I would get my, how many of you beat yourself up about the things that you did? I went through all of that, beating myself up. And then that only makes you depressed and want to cry a lot, and then the depression is just as bad as being in an addiction. And primary relapse there, you know. It's a what am I doing this for type thing, you know, and I had that. I had a lot of that. But God puts people in your life that work around. And I guess when it came to like the first step, I had to admit I was powerless over my addiction, and I always just kept saying, if I was powerless over my addiction, then I would be hot. I'm not powerless over my addiction. I have power over my addiction. And then as you grow older and you learn more, you start realizing, well, yeah, you know what? I was powerless over it because it took everything I had to get out of it. It took everything. Losing husbands, children, houses, even material belongings, losing who I was, who I was wanted to be. I had dreams as a kid and I never realized those things. Today I look back on that and think, well, you know, that wasn't what I was intended to do. God had a plan and I was moving with the plan. So when the depression started happening and I started talking to more people and started meeting people in the program, meeting people outside of the program, because not only do we have to deal with our own attitudes and our own behaviors, but we have society's attitudes and behaviors that we have to deal with, and we're not exactly looked upon favorably by a lot of people. Society, you know, especially when I was growing up, being added to something really, really bad. You're immoral. There's something terribly wrong with you if you're an addict. You know, nobody understood the disease concept, nor did they wish to. Not the people I was around. Not my parents. There's something wrong with you. And we're going to fix it. And they couldn't fix it. My parents had a hard time with that. And I did the usual, yes, it'll never happen again, and right back out there again. I went, and yes, it'll never happen again, and right. So when it really, you know, I don't know. I just knew one day, when it was time. I just knew. I woke up in a hotel room, by myself, of course, injured my back. So funny now, I don't know if any of you are from the Altoona area, but the Altoona Clubhouse, the downtown Altoona, that was the place I had my last drunk at. That used to be the engine room years ago. And that's where I had my last drunk when I walked into the clubhouse. It was a very freaking feeling. And I was tossed off that day. That night I'd been tossed off the stage, and I hurt my back really bad. But I left my house. My parents were angry. I didn't want to face that. Do you ever want to face that? No, that's why I left. Got a cab because we didn't have a license by then. And not that I lost it, I just chose not to have one because there was really no reason for me to have one unless I wanted to kill myself. So I depended on other people, but I got a cab and went to a hotel. I woke up in that hotel and I was trying to drink. I was trying to drink. And I had a cup of scotch because that's what I drank back then. I had a cup of scotch and I kept bringing it to my mouth and I kept gagging it. And it was that day that I knew that it would never happen to me again. And I knew it. And I knew not to go tell my parents. I knew not to go up there and say to them, it'll never happen again. Because I know if I said that, they would have just went. And I would have deserved that. So I didn't say it was the last time I'd ever drink again. I didn't say anything. And I just figured I'd better walk, and I had to walk and walk, and the talking had to be done, and it was, and it took years. My mother was behind me all the time. My father, it took years. The children, because my children were adolescents at the time, they were like 13, 14 years old, they're adults now. It took my son years to recover from what I did to him. My daughter now. She always loved me, always will. She just had that attitude, but not she. She was not like that. She lives with us now. She lives with us now, and he's part of the family. I mean, now part of the family. He kisses me, hugs me, helps me, loves me. That's all. Fairly new stuff, you know. Fairly new stuff. New attitudes and behaviors on his part. They change how they act towards you. It takes a long time. My sisters and brothers, they all live in Tennessee. I'm the only one up here. Came up here with my parents because I couldn't exist on my own. I had to be taken care of. And it was the safest thing to do for my children. I work with children now who are taken out of people's homes by CYS. My children should have been taken away from me. I see that. However, I lived with my mother and my father, and they were good role models and took care of them for me. One of my biggest enablers were my parents. As soon as they could get, they still allowed me to continue doing what I was doing. But as recovery went on, when I decided this was it, I knew where to get the help. I knew what to do because of the chronic relapse. Then in the rehab, came out of rehab. I knew what I had to do. I knew what I was supposed to do. And I had someone put in my life at that time that was willing to do it with me. He was my drinking partner, and he was my drugging partner because we ran the cocaine really heavily. I ditched the heroin years before. But we were into a lot of that. But he was willing to be with me. And for several years, I stayed with him. And his support and his not allowing drinking in the house helped. But I outgrew him. I outgrew him. And he's not in my life now. And that's why I say, God, without him, I probably wouldn't have been. I don't think I could have managed all the way through every step of the way. He was a real strong support for me, although he had a lot of problems of his own. He didn't drink and he didn't use drugs while he was with me. And that's what I needed. In rehab, they tried to tell me that, and I didn't believe them. AA, they tried to tell me that, and I didn't believe them. You can't be around things. You can't be around old people. You can't be around old places. I didn't believe them. NA, didn't believe them. And now if you talk to any, I've seen so many relapsers, and if you talk to relapsers, you ask them, why did you relapse? And every single one of them will tell you. Old people, places, and things. And old people doesn't mean necessarily old people like old friends. You can find new people like the old people and trick yourself into thinking that it's okay, but it's not. So it should be old people, places, and things. It should be anything like the old people, places, and things. Because that's where I fall down a lot. I was in this state for 2 weeks. Didn't know a soul in the state and had a cocaine connection in 2 weeks, and I wasn't even looking for one. If you don't go looking for it, it finds you.
It does find you.
And that's because you draw the type of people you act like. Your old attitudes and your old behaviors draw people with the same attitudes and the same behaviors. It's not going to help you. You have to make the changes. So to deal with the depression, I decided I'd change how I think, because I'm pretty cognitive that way. I have to understand something. I have to put it in my intellect. And I've always had a higher power. That was never a problem for me. I always believed in God right from the time I was born. How I look at my higher power today, that's the difference. You know, I don't expect my higher power to fix things for me anymore. Before, that's what I expected. I'd pray for things to be fixed. And, you know, it's just, I don't expect him to fix things for me. I expect to have to fix for myself. But I do, and I truly believe that he will provide all the education I need to help myself. Whether that's formal education or meeting people and learning things from other people, and I learn something every day. I go to work every day with some of the children I work with. If I don't say to myself in the morning, what am I going to learn from this child today? I'll kill them by the end of the day. So you have to look at it. It has to be a learning process. These kids are putting my life for a reason too, and I'm going to learn from these children. But I had to start thinking that all the things that I did in my life, all the things that caused me to lose things over and over again, lose people, lose respect, lose faith, lose everything that I had, was for a reason. If I thought that I just did that because I liked being hurt or somebody was out to get me or my life was just shit, you know, if that's how I thought, then I wouldn't have been able to go on. I could not. I have, you know, we've all done things in our lives that we don't even want the people closest to us to know about sometimes. That's how bad it is, and how you feel how bad it is. And to cope with that, I just said, you know, I walked that walk, I walked down those corridors, I learned everything I could, and I was a good addict. I don't know too many addicts that are. You know, you learn how to lie, you learn how to cheat, you learn how to manipulate, you learn how to talk to people, you learn how to isolate, you learn how to be by yourself, you learn how to make yourself bad, you know, how to make yourself what you think is bad. You learn all of those little tricks and skills, and a lot of those skills, guys, don't lose them, because some of those skills will work for you later if you use them. Manipulation is not a bad skill to have. It's how you use it that it matters. Manipulation is a theme of life. And if you know how to use it, you can help a lot of people along with helping yourself. But if you use it for self-serving, self-centered reason, is only come back in person. So I have to start thinking, this is my schooling. Okay, everything I learned was for a reason, because God has a plan. God has a plan. So I kept saying to myself through all those years, is God has a plan, and it's going to be exciting to find out what that plan is going to be. It's going to be exciting to find out what he has in store for me. Because if I didn't keep thinking that way, and I didn't change how I thought about things, I wouldn't be able to that. I wouldn't be that funny. And you think about, okay, then you go to rehab and they teach you all kinds of stuff. Like, you know, people don't make them angry. You make yourself angry. And you look at those people. It's crazy. I don't go around making monsters. Oh, you let them make you angry. First time I heard those words, it was like, you people are crap. I don't even know what you're talking about, because he's sitting over there saying something stupid and pissing me off. Okay? This is how my thought process is. And you people are nuts. And then I started thinking about it. However, I can't change what this man is saying over here that's making me angry, can I? You know, I can't go up and look inside his mouth, because that's not what we do in life. So what do I have to do? I have to change how I think about what he's saying, or change how I think about how I feel about what he's saying. You know, so I learned to adopt the thought of, it's his problem, and I don't need it. You know, I refuse to make this problem my problem. He's so dumb that he's saying all the things he's saying that's really kicking me off, and that's his problem, and I want to make it my problem. And I'm not going to make it my problem. And I just think that way. You have to accept other people for what they are, and for what they do, for what they say, for what they think. You don't have to be around them. but you got to accept it. Because you can't walk around angry all your life either. That's another relapse ticket. You know? Other people's attitudes. How do you not let them affect you? That was my big question. How do you let them not affect you? They're living with you. They're around you all the time. How do you not let them affect you? Well, if you keep thinking that they're affecting you, they're going to. If you keep thinking, oh, they're affecting you, they're affecting you. They're going to affect you. You got to turn it off. You don't want to hear what they have to say, you don't. You don't have to hear what they say. No one's making you anything. You know, those are your choices. And if you choose to hear what they say, well, that's your choice too. And sometimes what they're saying is really ticking me off because it's maybe the truth you're hearing. So I couldn't stand the truth. It was very hard. That was a hard thing for me to do, just to do the truth about me. I should listen to the truth back too anyway, but I had a very hard time listening to the truth about me, and I still do. To this day, I still do. If my husband will attest to, I have a hard time. However, I'm trying to keep an open mind. I talk about it every day, all day long, so I try to keep an open mind. We have a level system at the place that I work, and we use the same as a cross-step program instead of just going surrender, honesty, openness, and willingness. And to achieve each level, they have to show that. The surrendering is the basis. You're in the facility. How you got there, we don't care. Honesty, you earn that level. When you're honest about what you feel and about what you say, and maybe about honest about anything, one little thing for some of these kids to be honest about is the deal. You know, for us, maybe we take honesty for granted. I don't, because it's very hard for me. That's honesty is a very hard thing. It's a very hard thing. I lied for many, many years, and I learned it very, very well. As most addicts do, you can't survive without knowing how to lie and be honest, you can't. Not if you're a good addict. You have to come across. So it's a very hard thing. So when I hear a kid be honest about one feeling, when they look at you and they tell you something, and you know the truth, you know, it's just a feeling. You want to make sure that they know. And that's the same thing with everybody in this room. Be honest about one thing. Somebody needs to notice that. Especially you. Especially you. Openness. Not open about everything what you're saying. Openness is the other way for me. It's openness about listening to what everybody else has to say to me. I can be open. I've always been open. I could tell you all kinds of stuff, but hearing this is another story. Hearing this. Being open to listening to what other people have to say, how they feel, and what they do. That's a whole different ballgame for me. And that's where my openness is a trouble spot. Willingness? Oh, I'm willing. I'm willing to do all kinds of things. Except be open-minded at times. Okay? I'm willing to do a lot of things. Except hear the truth about myself at times. And I go to lengths for a lot of people, but I'm not often willing to go to a lot of lengths about for myself. And everybody needs to know that in recovery, you come first. Your recovery is number one, and you have to take care of you. If you're not taking care of you, then your recovery is not going to last. It's not going to last. First step was pretty easy. After a while, I understood. Yes, okay. I was powerless over my addiction because it ruled me for many years, and I can look at it that way, and that's fine. My life was unmanageable. I was living with my parents, for crying out loud. I was 30 years old. I had three kids. One didn't live with me. I had a job. Oh, great. I guess that was good. I was a functioning alcoholic and an addict. That's not okay. My life was unmanageable, totally unmanageable. And at times today it's unmanageable and I feel out of control and I don't like that feeling. But yeah, it was unmanageable. Higher power, I always believed in it. Came to believe that he could restore me to sanity. Like I said, I kept praying for him to do things for me and he wasn't. So that was a difficult spot for me. And step 4, I'm still on. I'll be on step 4 for the rest of my life. says, I have a hard time hearing the truth about myself. I have a hard time looking at the truth about myself. And not always the bad. Sometimes it's even good. I don't want to hear it. I don't know why that is. You know, I look for those answers. But that's how I am. And I know that's how I am. I love to tell people good things about themselves, but I have a hard time hearing good things about me. I don't think I'm alone in that. I don't know why I have that. Maybe it's part of being called up. I don't know. And that's part of what I have. I had my kids, like I said, put attitudes and behaviors. We had so many attitudes and behaviors up on the board. A whole bunch of them. Everything from lying, cheating, getting poor grades in school, to unwanted pregnancies, STDs, and AIDS. These are behaviors that can kill you. You know? I look at kids and I say to them, do you understand that when you're in a blackout, I don't know how many of you have experienced blackouts, but for a very long time, I lived in one almost all the time, and towards the end, it got really bad, because I used to be able to predict stuff. Like, okay, you know, if I'm doing this much cocaine with drinking, then I could probably survive half the night, blah, blah, blah. I had it in my head, and then one day, it started all going haywire on me, and I could drink myself sober. People don't believe that, but that's what I felt like. I could drink all day, all night, use cocaine all night, all day, and never lose anything. And then the next day I could have a drink and be in a blackout the whole night and not know what I was doing. You know, of course, when you're younger and that happens to you, it's funny. You know what you did last night, old man? You laugh with them, you know, because all the stupid stuff, and pretty soon you don't even want to see the people you were with that night before because you don't want to know what you did the night before. Thank you. You know, it was very scary, really. Very scary. And those are behaviors that can kill us. And they often do. They often do kill us. Those are the behaviors that put not only us at risk, but everybody we're with at risk, our families at risk, our children at risk. I don't know, there's all attitudes and behavior. Now you're in recovery, and how do we change the attitudes and behaviors? Practice. There is no other way to change anything in your life. God is not going to come down and wave a wand and everything is going to be wonderful and beautiful and you're going to be a great person, because that's not how it works. It's practice. Just like anything else you do in life, it's practice. You practice telling the truth. And if that means stopping in the middle of a statement and saying, you know, I am lying to you, and trust me, I don't know why, but it's not the truth. So I'm going to start this over, if you don't mind. You know, if it takes that, then that's what it takes. But it's practice. Okay. Practice being honest. Practice learning when to close the mouth, open the ears, as we so aptly put it in this program. Listening instead of talk. Learning how to listen instead of talk. I always want to be the one that's talking, you know. But it's really hard. Learning how to listen and being open. Practice. I learned that in the program I work in too. When you get people in, and this is for adults too, come into our adult program. We have a community meeting. I don't know if any of you have been in rehab, but if you have, you'll know what community meeting is all about. But when you have lessons, the community meeting comes and somebody confronts you in the community meeting, you're not allowed to say anything. You can't say anything back to them. Whether they're right, they're wrong, you're mad or not, it doesn't matter. You don't say anything. You accept it. Kids always say, what did you stick up for yourself? What can't we tell people? He's wrong. He's like this. Well, there's a reason for this. This is for you to practice listening instead of talking. You know, probably in the real world you have a chance to talk and maybe have a little bit of a conversation there. But in this program, we're learning how to listen. This is the meeting to learn how to listen. So you can't. And you learn how to accept confrontation, because no addicts are very good at taking confrontation. Still to this day, I will avoid confrontation at any cost. I don't care. Conflict and I do not get along, as far as I just, it's, you know, I don't like confrontation. I have a hard time with confrontation. confronting people and being confronted. Both ways. Doesn't matter. I get defensive, and I know that. Am I changing it? I work at it every day. For me, it's got to be the longest process of my entire recovery. That's the hardest thing for me to do. But, and I may not regret it. I may die. I don't have to do this. But at least I'll know I died trying. You know, I died trying to do it. And then that was a difficult area for me. Tenth step is a difficult area for me. Looking at myself on a daily basis. It's probably the best step in the entire set, as far as I'm concerned, because it helps keep the soul clean. It helps clean you up every day. You know, and I argue with myself. Do any of you argue with yourself? I argue with you. Well, it was wrong. No, it wasn't really. You had a reason for it. No, that's an excuse. I go back and forth, back and forth. And I don't want to share it with anybody because, you know why? Because I know the truth. We all really know what the truth is deep inside. You know the truth. You just don't want to face it. Facing things. Oh, yay. We have that fear thing, you know? F everything and run or face everything and cover. I was a runner for a long time. I run some things. I still run for some things. I still run. And I don't know why. Because I know. And I practice facing it, and it really does work. You know, if you walk through the wall of fire to the other side, it's okay. You don't, it doesn't kill you. It does not kill you. It's just too hard. Sometimes it's hard. And I hate using that word hard. I tell people, don't tell yourself it's too hard, because if you tell yourself it's too hard, then it will be. Don't tell yourself. How you talk, how you relate to yourself matters. You know, the words you use matter. Let us try. Well, now. But today, after all of these years, and after all of the programs, in and out, in and out, in and out, I think the thing that keeps me together the most is my higher power, my spirituality. Because no matter what, I know I have someone with me at all times. I'm never alone. Never alone. I also know that I have lots of good friends, lots of people who care about me. I'm an isolator. I have a tendency to isolate and push people away, and I know that. And usually it's because I'm not comfortable with myself for that time period. I'm ready to be alone. But I have lots of good friends and people who care about me. I can depend on my husband, I know that. He will always be there. I have a lot of good things in my life. I have a lot of problems in my life too. But you know, I have a lot of good things in my life. And recovery brings a lot of good things into your life. It's how you look at it. All the time you look at it and how you think. Because how you think changes how you feel. And how you feel will change how you behave. If you don't change how you think, and when you think about yourself and think about other people and think about things that are being said to you or not said to you, things that you believe in, then you're really not going to make any major changes. Practicing how to change how you think, that's it. Just practice it. Thought comes into your head. It doesn't have to be yours. And you know what? Your addiction talks to you. I don't know about you. But mine does all the time. And I thought I was exempt from that. I really did. I didn't think that my addiction talked to me very much anymore. Because I don't have those thoughts too much anymore. So one day I'm at the, I don't know if any of you from Altoona, you know where the Bridgeview Bar is. I'm sitting at the light in front of the Bridgeview out of nowhere. The thought came into my head, you know, you go right in there and have a drink and no one would ever know. And I'm like, what is that? And I didn't want to tell anybody. Because I didn't know what they would think about me. After all, I had a lot of years clean. I didn't want people to think bad about me. And I went to work and I had a friend I was working with. And our anniversary dates are very close for right in the same week. And she came to work. Now, she's not like me. She doesn't keep things like that to herself. She's very open. She sits there next to me and says, you'll never guess what I had. I had a thought. Something told me I could drink and no one would ever know about it. And I went, Kate, I'm so glad you said that.
And I shared with her how I felt. And after I shared with her how I felt, I felt like somebody just lifted a tired ton off my shoulder. Because, you know, it wasn't a bad thing. It was just your addiction talking to you. But I needed somebody to verify that for you. I knew it, but I needed someone to verify it. And I felt a whole lot better. So talk. Don't keep things inside. Talk about it. If it's bothering you, talk about it. Find somebody to talk about it. It does feel better. And you know, when you find that other person to talk about it with, you're not only helping yourself, but I'm sure you're helping them too. You know? Because I don't know, when someone comes to me and says, you know, I need to talk to you, and they share something personal with me, it makes me feel better. Like, I'm so glad they feel that way. That they can say something to me and know that it's safe with me. I can make someone feel that way. People in the program, that's what it's all about, being able to trust each other. You know, trust is a hard issue for a lot of us and a lot of addicts. You know, trusting people is not something you do in addiction. You can't afford trusting people in addiction. You can't afford to trust the people you love, and you can't afford to trust the people that you're with. So, those are other attitudes that you have to change. Another attitude that you have to work at, learning how to trust people. I'm happy with my life. I'm happy with my recovery, and I'm happy about where I am today. I need a lot of work. No doubt about that. And it will go on forever. But I work very hard at changing how I think about things. Especially changing how I think about what I did. And the things that I did in my addiction. I really worked hard at that because it will destroy you if you beat yourself up. And I can't be destroyed. I can't be destroyed today. I don't want to be. I want to die. I want to live. And I want to live well. I don't want to just exist. And that's all I want is an act. I want to just exist. And I don't want that anymore. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, we work separate programs in a minute, but we go along.
Thank you, Tommy. Second stick is pause. I have no idea what time it is. I don't really watch.
Oh, it's 2:00.
And so just now, whenever.
You said your people time.
Yeah. If anybody else is on a time factor, I'm not. I mean, I'm the chairperson here, so.
You do it what you want to do.
Yeah, cool. Whatever floats your boat and keeps you sober. So, welcome, Todd.
Thank you.
Okay?
My name's
Todd,
and
I'm
over
here.
Yeah,
because you got it recorded.
Oh,
all right. Thanks. All right. I'd like to thank the powers of be for asking me to share today. We came from the Poconos, and all of us came in, and it was a nice time. This is my fourth year that I've come to this retreat, and I really enjoy it. I look forward to it. And I guess there's no coincidences that I'm speaking on this attitudes and behaviors, because I was just talking about it last night. It's a big theme in my recovery, you know. And what I have to reiterate what I said last night, like when I first came in, like I learned my attitudes and behaviors growing up. You know what I mean? They were learned. They were skills that I developed. I was taught by my parents. Like I come from a family that like my father's a real, he's a quiet man, but he's pretty frank. And like he would tell me, I'd hear growing up about, like if I thought I was right or if I learned something, like he was a fist fighter, I should say. He raised with 3 boys. He was a fist fighter. And like I was the youngest, and I would hear this, you know what I mean? And I thought it was perfectly okay growing up to get in fist fights. Like, I used to fight a lot. Like, when something would go my way, I'd fight, or if I wanted something, or, you know, and I was getting a lot of fights. And, my mother was, she was a very outgoing,
like animated, but manipulative person, you know what I mean? And like I learned these behaviors that like when I was little, I would make my parents, like I'd make my family laugh, you know what I mean? And I'd tell them stories that I would feel loved. You know, when things were financially we were strapped a lot of times, and my father worked a lot, and there was a lot of pressure on me. And I found when I would tell stories and tell stories, I mean lie, and and it would make the family a little lighter. It would make me feel like I was loved, like, you know what I mean? And it was like doing that. That's how I learned. That was my first form of manipulation. Like, that's how I started manipulating people, you know? And, but then when I went to school and got around a bigger community, then the violence came in. Because if you didn't do what I wanted you to do, like, I would go to the extreme. You know what I mean? I would push it. Like, until, if you didn't like confrontation, I won. Or if you liked confrontation, whoever won, won. You know? And that's how I lived my life for a lot of years. Until I came into recovery, really. Like, even being in my 20s, like, I would push something to either, you know, fight or climb a tree. You know? Because that's the only way you were going to get around me. And it, you know, a lot of times it hurt. You know what I mean? A lot of times I got hurt, but I wasn't getting out of that mindset because it worked for me. Like, that type of thing worked for me. You know, that those attitudes and behaviors got me what I wanted. My self-centeredness was served by doing that. You know what I mean? And, like, when I came into recovery, kind of like at the end of the road, I thought, with uninterrupted until the law told me, you're going to go to jail or you're going to go to rehab. You know what I mean? And I knew everybody I was born and raised in the Poconos. And I knew everybody. And everybody by the time, at this point, knew what I was about. You know what I mean? And they were, like, they just couldn't do any more for me. Like, they couldn't help me out anymore, you know? And they were like, yay, you know, this is what it is. So, like I said, all right, you know, I'll just stop using. You know what I mean? I'll just stop using. And, you know, we know that doesn't work. You know? That, because, like, I didn't change anything. I didn't change any of my behaviors, how I treated people, how I talked to people, how I acted. I didn't change any of that. You know? I just stopped using. And would relapse. Until, finally, like, somebody looked at me and they said, you know, some people just don't get this. And you might be one of them. You know, and that was like a slap in the face for me. Because I thought, holy, you know, I might not be able to get there. Like, it was like, he might be telling me the truth. I might not get this. And then I thought, what? Because I always thought, like, when I quit, I was like, well, I guess I'll just stop using. Like, in the back of my head, I thought I could control what is out. I know now is my disease. I thought I could control my disease. And, you know, through relapse and coming back, it just got me lower. Like, I was sucked down to the bottom anyway. I was, like, I was homeless, carless, jobless for, like, more than a year. Like, I don't really know how long, but it was a long time. I was going from friend's house to friend's house. You know, and he's staying in a hotel, running up my credit card because I had a business. So I ran up all the credit cards, you know, at the end. And you know what is a really good thing? Get credit in an hour, they give you money in an hour. Right? You go to the place, and you give them all your information, and they give you money. You know what I mean? And I would only go for like 500, you know what I mean? Because I don't want to be greedy. And I thought it was a good number. So I would go around and, you know, get all these $500 loans. And so anyway, you know, that's short-lived. You know what I mean? And then it was down to the just the hanging around. Just that hanging around, looking for somebody to throw me something. What I could do to get another one. You know what I mean? And that's how I came in. You know what I mean? And, like, I went from there, I went into a rehab for 30 days, and, like, skated through that, and when I kept relapsing, it got worse for me. It would get worse from there. You know, it would always get worse. You know, I didn't send, every time I picked up, I didn't intend for everybody to cry. Everybody to just be pulling their hair out, and, like, that was not my intention. I just wanted to get high. You know? And, like, you were talking about the consequences. Like, the consequences became too great for me, you know? And I found myself back in that same rehab, very humbly going back into this rehab. And I got to tell the story again. And it was late. I've never told it in, what, 3 years, 4 years? I told it twice a day. But, you know, there was this lady in the rehab, a receptionist, and she was a rough lady. She was very, she had like a, she looked down, like she had just a condescending attitude, you know what I mean?
Her name was?
And I really don't know her name, but she did have very, one of those attitudes. I didn't like her the first time I was there. And, like, I came back, and right there she was registering me, and she, I said, I'm going to go in 5 days, I'm going to detox. You know, I'm going to go in 5 days, detox. I'm under Narcotics Anonymous, and my sponsor, I know what to do. I just need this little time here to get my shit together, get off the street, and, you know, get some sleep. So she said, she calls, and they said, no. They said, no, Dad, we're not going to take it. So I said, call them back. Tell them I'm not going to, and she was saying, well, I still want to do things your way, don't you? Still want to do things your way. Yeah. I want to knock her arm off her fucking chair. I didn't. Because I just wanted to, you know what I mean? I just wanted to do what I wanted to do, you know? And it went back and forth, and I said, make another phone call. If you make a phone, then I get on the phone. And they're telling me on the other end, Todd, you need a 9-month program. You are so sick, you need a 9-month program. You need extended treatment, they were telling me. And I was thinking, what are these people? Nuts? You know what I mean? Are they nuts or what? So I hung up the phone, and I sat there like this, and then this awareness came, and I thought, this is it. And I looked at her, I said, this is it. Is this it? Is this the surrender? Is this what I'm supposed to fucking do? That's exactly what I said. Is this it? Because everything in my body wanted to stick to my plan, walk out of that place, and do it on my own. And I said, I still didn't believe that was it. You know what I mean? But I said, all right. I told her, okay. And that surrender was the beginning of my change. That was the change, you know? And, like, that was the first step to recovery for me. Like, that was the big step. To do something that went so against my grain that it hurt. It hurt. Like, kicking dope, like, running down, you know what I mean, aching in my chest, pain. Like, that was my disease holding on to me, you know what I mean? Holding on. Just wanted me to just do it, try it, try it, you can do it, you know what I mean? And possibly fail again. You know, we'll never know. But this way turned out to be, you know what I mean, this way led me on a path of surrender. You know what I mean? This path led me on the path to surrender. You know? When I got, you know, I had a sponsor, I got a home group, and surrounded myself with a support group, my attitude today, I still have, I still don't have the best attitudes, and my behaviors at times aren't really sociably acceptable. And my attitudes definitely aren't so successful, really. But, like, I wrote on the first step, you know what I mean? And by writing on the first step with a sponsor, that's, you know what I mean? That's how I could see, you know, what I did to myself, what I was doing to myself. You know what I mean? And that was like that awareness. And then going on to a second step, just being open-minded enough to try something different. To try, even like when I came into the rooms, I would get in arguments. I'm in construction, right? I started in construction. And I was, like my mouth and the way I talked to people was, it was ridiculous. It was ridiculous. Because I treated, you know, it was, I don't know how to put it, but I was very abrasive. I was very abrasive. That's nice. That's a nice word, isn't it? It's a nice word, I was abrasive. But, like, I'd butt shit apart, you know what I mean? I'd get right up in the guys, you know, not on a daily basis, but I'd be screaming, you know what I mean? I'd be screaming on a daily basis, you know. And, like, those things caused me pain. Like, I noticed, you know, like, going to meetings, talking over with my sponsor, like, I talk to my sponsor every day. And that's what I'd be talking to him about every day, you know, about how I couldn't relate to people, how I treated people, and I shared a need. You share about something you're struggling with, and if you continue to struggle and you continue to share a need, you're going to get up off your ass and you're going to do something about it, because you're going to be tired of listening to yourself. You know, you're going to be tired of talking about it. You're going to, like, it's something, that's what recovery is. You know what I mean? It's the process of going forward. You know what I mean? So I might struggle with it. I still struggle with it. But I don't struggle with it as nearly as badly as I used to. You know what I mean? And then being open, like taking that open-mindedness and putting it into action in the third step. You know what I mean? Like making that decision just not to react. Or like a lot of times react and then feel terrible about it. You know, talking about it in a meeting. Like, that's how I stopped doing that type of thing. You know what I mean? I think by going to meetings and sharing about it and just through time just saying, this is not okay. And having enough abstinence and enough time in the program that I could start to change that. That I could not, like, I wouldn't say anything. I'd walk away. And that's where I found myself today now. Like, I won't say anything, but I won't know what else to do. So I walk around confused about, and somebody told me to meet it. I'm not kidding you. Like, I get confused. Like, I don't know what to do. I know, I'm like, and I walk around, and I just look around, and I'm like, what was I doing before that? You know, and I just say, it's okay. I walk confused, and I get back to what I was doing, and then it works out. So now I don't walk, like, that was like a couple months ago. And now I'm not walking around as confused. I get angry, but I can stay there and say, let's just get it done. Instead of that confused walk, I can just say, go bypass that, right? Bypass the confusion, and just say, let's fix it. How are we going to fix it? Like, jump immediately to the solution. That's the principle. Like, I wrote, like, on the sixth step. When I wrote on my sixth step, like, all that stuff that I inventoried and talked about that served me no purpose whatsoever, right? All the stuff I've been talking about, wrote it all down. What it has done to me in the sixth step. Like, what have all those behaviors and attitudes have done for me? You know what I mean? And they haven't done anything but keep me farther away from the God of my understanding. You know what I mean? They just kept me farther and farther. And the more I do it, the farther away I get. You know what I mean? And, like, what would my life be without those defects? Now I'm starting to see what my life will be without those defects. Because I'm not acting out on those behaviors. My attitudes are changing. And what I see is I'm becoming a hell of a lot more productive. Like, my day is freed up. Because when I say I walk around or I'd go off. I'd go off for a day. I'd go off for hours. I'd be like insane. I would be insane for a day if something went wrong. You know what I mean? And if I didn't have a business partner, I wouldn't have a crew because I would have fired every one of them son of a bitches. I would have fired guys 5-6 times. You know what I mean? And thank God I had a business partner with patience. He had the patience of a saint. You know what I mean? And he, with me, you know? Like, today I'm starting to get a glimpse. Like, there's a lot of things that I just don't understand what's going on. But the process, like, I'm staying in the process, you know? I'm staying in the process that my attitude and behaviors, I'm not the same person that walked in here. You know what I mean? I'm just not the same. Like, I'm changed, you know? And it's through working with the sponsors, it's through meeting attendants, and being around people. Like, today we were going and we had, like, we took the, I don't know, we didn't take a wrong turn, we just went farther than what we should have, right? On the thing. And I said, let's just go back down 20, you know what I mean? And I wasn't angry till they said there was a better way. I didn't give a fuck what way we went. I just wanted to get here. You know what I mean? It don't go down whatever. I just go back down a freeway and come down this freeway. You know what I mean? And I didn't hurt myself like I normally would. You know what I'm saying? Nothing came out of my mouth that was that hurtful. A little bit of an attitude I had. Like, I won't say anything. Whereas before, I thought it was my right and my duty to say, you're fucking wrong. And I don't give a, you know what I mean? Now today, like, a little bit of humility's in my life. I think I've gained a little humility. And that's from inventorying what I've done in a 4-step. Like, that work I've done in that 4-step has really put things into perspective for me. You know what I mean? It's really, I've gained the perspective of how defective I am on my own. You know what I'm saying? And, like, in that, like I was saying, in that 6-step, it's like the work in those 4 steps is really going to be the turning point, I feel, in my life. You know what I mean? It's going to, I shared yesterday also that I had an awakening the other day. You know, it's an awakening for me. Maybe everybody else fucking knows it. But, like, all these things that I'm doing, all this work that I'm doing in, for my recovery, is to clear the way for me to be of service to the God of my understanding. You know, that's it. You know, it doesn't sound like that's it, but that's what it's for. It's for me to be of service, for me to be available out of my disease in the moment, for me to recognize when I can be of service to another human being. And you know what? Nothing has given me more, excuse me, pleasure and more self-esteem and more self-worth than when I'm helping another person. You know what I mean? I can't buy anything that's going to make me feel that good. I can't do anything for me that's going to, I don't know, I'm not a big material guy, but if I get something and I really like it, but, you know what I mean? It's going to sit in my drawer. Eventually, it's going to sit in a drawer. I don't care what. You know what I'm saying? It's going to sit in a drawer. But when I help somebody, and I'm of continual service, that gives me, like, a feeling. That gives me a purpose. You know what I mean? That things just can't. People, places, and things. When I'm of service, you know what I mean? And that's where my attitudes and behaviors, you know what I mean? I feel have to go in. It has to go in an era of service. Like, the thing that gave me this awakening was this guy at the pig roof. And Devin, this is what he said. He said, I've never been to a bad meeting. This guy said. You know, immediately I thought, Dad, I've been to some bad meetings. And I ain't going back. I've been to some real shitty meetings. And what I missed in that, because of me, what I missed was when, he said, when I go to the meeting in an air of service, how can I serve this meeting that I'm going to? When he goes to the meeting in service, what can he do? He's never had a bad meeting. And when she said, and I thought about that for a while, and I thought, when I go in service to anything, I never have a bad time, because my expectations are, how can I serve? Not how can it serve me? Like going to a movie. Like, you know what I mean? Sometimes you're disappointed because you're looking to be entertained. You know what I mean? But if you go somewhere in service, you can never be let down. You can never be put down. Like, disappointed. You know what I mean? And that's of service to the God of my understanding. That's when I'm of service to the God. And I'm not there. You know what I mean? I'm just not there. Sometimes I am. Like, I get a glimpse. I get a glimpse of what this can be, you know, and then I come back. You know what I mean? But it's the process of that that God sees. God sees us making telephone calls when people aren't home. God sees us doing those things of service, picking up cigarette butts when nobody's around. You know what I mean? Of trying to make it a little better than what we found it. You know? And that's what gives me today, that's what gives me like that attitude of, you know, there's just nothing better than this. I wouldn't trade this for anything in the world, you know. The road here was a son of a bitch. I ain't kidding you. You know what I mean? I have regret for what I've done to the people, every person that had come in contact with me, that came in contact with me. Because I didn't want to hurt them, but I did. You know what I mean? And that's just the way it went. I had to go through that. I feel that I had to go through that by my choice, my will, to be able to come around to where I am today. You know what I mean? And the journey was rough. The journey was rough. And I can go back there by not continuing on the path that is laid out for me in the 12 steps. Start my day in a rush and don't invite God in, I might not have the worst day of my life, you know what I'm saying? I might not have a real, but I won't have as good a day as when I make that conscious contact. When I get down on my knees and I'm on a 7-step now that I'm, you know what I mean? I'm through the, is anybody like looking around when before I get down on my knees? I'm in construction. I get down on my knees not knowing whether or not I'm going to get back up again. You know what I mean? In the morning, because every time I get up, bro, I'm like, oh, Jesus. And, like, I get down there, and I really try my best to humbly ask him to help me for that day, you know? And it's been working, you know? And as long as I'm staying in that process, you know what I mean, that my attitudes and behaviors will change. You know, because I'm not doing it by myself. See, my first thought is homicidal most of the time. My first reaction, if I put it into action, is going to hurt me and hurt everybody around me. I know that because I wrote a notebook all about it. You know what I'm saying? I got a notebook full of that shit. But if I can just wait a minute, give myself that minute, like it talks about in the basic text, invite God in, that behavior is not going to come out. You know what I mean? That behavior is going to stay where it should be. You know? And I don't know if it'll ever change, but I'm really not worried about it. You know what I mean? Because if it's supposed to be changed, it will. But if it's not, I'm coping with it. You know what I mean? I'm coping with it. Everybody's got their things, their crosses to bear, if you will. You know, and I got mine. And I'll take mine any day. You know what I mean? I'll take my shit any day. And, like I say, man, I just like to thank, you know, I really like coming to this retreat. It's, you know, it's something that I've done for the last 3 years. And it's a consistent, I like to, like everything's changing, everything changes, but I like when things, like I might not be able to come here next year for whatever reason, but I'm so glad that I was able to come this year, you know what I'm saying? Because we all know, we don't know what's going to happen, you know what I mean? But we're together today, you know what I mean? And I came down with, we're in the same home group, Devin, Sonia, and Josh and I, we're in the same home group, you know what I mean? And it's just so cool to be able to do that, you know what I mean? Because a lot of people don't have that tightness with their home group, but I think it's such a blessing that we're able to have that, you know what I mean? And like I just like to say, I have a daughter, and like I'm able today to serve her to the best of my ability. I can serve my family, my daughter, and my fiance in a relationship. You know what I mean? I tried to the best of my ability, man, to be of service to my family. You know? And what that gives me is just like, I can't, like, it's all about service to me, you know? And I can't tell you what it's done. For the guy that, like, nobody wanted me around. I wanted to show up when my father wanted me to do something to help him, but I just couldn't, you know? Up until the time that I was late, I thought I was really actually going to make it there. Like, you know what I mean? I actually thought that I was so insane that, like, I could magically transform myself from a house, you know, that we're getting high at, to helping my father put a fence up or something like that, you know? Like, to go from there to being of actual service and getting some self-worth out of that is like it's a miracle. It's a miracle, you know? And it all has to do with, like, the change in my perception, you know? The change in my perception that the program of Narcotics Anonymous is given, you know, by the grace of God, by the grace of my God. Because, when you get out of something that you never thought you would be able to, you still can't believe that you're not in there. Like, you crawl out of a hole that you never thought you'd get out of, and you just remember, like, you can't believe that you got out. You know what I'm saying? I mean it. Like, gas and shit. Like, wow. I can't believe I got out of that. You know? And I didn't by myself. You know what I mean? And I didn't. You know? So that's the thing that I have to keep in mind. You know what I mean? And remain humble. You know? And stay in the process. Thanks for allowing me to share.